When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Forever Dog.
This is the couch guys and me. She's watched the show like a lot of times. Who is gonna be chief of surgery? Shonda Rhimes wrote the show and it is really, really good. Meredith Grey.
Hi! Welcome to the third episode of Nicole's Grey's Anatomy. Time is just, it's flying by. It has been so fun to make these, but it's been even better to hear from all of you about what you like and hear from you that you are enjoying the podcast. So I'm on Twitter at nsilverberg if you ever have any thoughts. And I do hope that you are subscribing to the podcast and rating it and reviewing it. And hopefully you love it and hopefully you're saying nice things. I can't tell you how amazing it has been just hearing from other Grey's fans, and also doing this podcast has inspired some of my friends who have never watched Grey's and my mom to start watching, which has been truly incredible. This episode was a blast. We talk about Meredith Grey, which is obviously like a huge subject, but Alana Bennett, who is just such a brilliant, funny, cool person, amazing writer. She has written about Grey's for a lot of publications. And she talks about it on Twitter a lot. And so we never met before, but I was like, please come on this podcast and talk. And she had the amazing idea to talk just kind of specifically about how Meredith has grown over time and these moments of self-actualization and maturation, and how she went from being this dark and twisty person who doesn't trust anyone to being someone who kind of runs her life in a really impressive, confident, open way. So I know that you're going to really love the conversation. If you are not a current Grey's watcher, you stopped because of some extremely valid reason between seasons 3 and 9, we have put a time code in the description because we do start talking about, you know, some season 15 business up top. And if that's not as much your cup of tea, or if you don't want spoilers for what's happening specifically in this season, because there are spoilers for just about everything else in the podcast, and I make no apologies about that. But if you don't if you want to get more into that older Meredith's journey, we've put a time code in the description where you can kind of scrub ahead and listen to all that good stuff. So yeah, that's it. That's my whole intro. It wasn't short. I'm not going to. Thank you. Okay, bye. Listen. Hello, welcome to another episode of Nicole's Grey's Anatomy. I'm so excited for the guests that we have today because, you know, in the community of people who are caught up on Grey's Anatomy, who are actively watching right now in season 15, I'm told that this is a community of millions, but in New York, you just feel so alone. And this writer has talked about Grey's on BuzzFeed, at Bustle, so many different places where I feel so heard. Most recently, I devoured an article she wrote about how Grey's is horny again. It's truly an honor to have Alana Bennett. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I'm actually a few episodes behind right now because I don't like DeLuca and I'm afraid of what I'm going to find. But it's just so, it feels so peaceful, deeply peaceful to be with someone who is currently watching Grey's.
There are so few of us that I know of.
Yes. I know of like 6 people. Right. And they'll all be on this podcast within like month one. and then what will I do? You know? I just think that well, I mean, that actually brings me to my first question, which is just, what has your Grey's journey been? What is your Grey's journey?
Oh, boy. It's been a time. I started watching Grey's. I looked it up recently. The show premiered when I was still 13 years old. A little 13-year-old in Portland, Oregon. And I watched it from that episode. I was like about to be 14, but like it still counts as like I was, I think it was like eighth grade. And I was into it immediately. And I've quit it multiple times over the years.
Okay, yeah.
First was when George and Izzy started like getting sexy with each other because that was incorrect.
Yeah, I mean, that's truly, that was the first like error that the show made. Right. It's like, oh no, this is wrong.
Oh no. and then again, when I heard that there was ghost sex happening on the show, I was like, I don't know if this is for me. And then in college, I circled back to it because I heard that it had gotten a little gay.
Yeah.
With Callie. And so I was like, oh, I want to see what this like bisexual character is doing. And then the shooting happened on the show. And I was like, that's like a really good episode. The show was actually good still. And then I caught up and then I quit again when Derek died. Not because he died, but because Meredith left for 9 months and like didn't talk to her friends. And that made me mad.
And she had a baby in secret.
Right. That, who does that?
Apparently Meredith Grey.
Yeah. But when I came back that time, I was like, you know what? We're very far into this show. I need to stop pretending that I'm ever going to quit it for good.
Yeah. I've only ever quit once. Like didn't watch for a year and was like, well, I guess it finally happened. And it was very late. It was when after Derek died, Meredith was gone for 9 months. Mm-hmm. She came back and she was like, well, I'm back. I've been through a lot. My life is hard, but I love medicine. And then she is promptly assaulted by a patient.
Oh, I just rewatched that episode because I'm rewatching the show with my roommate who's never seen it before.
Yeah.
And like, it's so soon after Derek.
It's so soon. And it's awful. People get like, not to be glib, but like people kind of get assaulted all the time on the show. People don't get like hospitalized.
No.
So, like, she was like hospitalized.
Couldn't hold her babies.
So this is actually like kind of a confession that I didn't expect to ever make. And now I guess I have to. I still haven't seen that episode. I read a beat by beat, like very detailed, like super fan wrote on the Grey's Wiki summary of it. Mm-hmm. And a year later, I read it. I was like, okay, this is what happened. And I just started the episode after that.
Yeah.
I just was like, I can't watch Meredith Grey get assaulted.
No.
I don't think ever. It's like, has my loyalty earned anything? Like, right. can I be given at least that much?
Yeah, it feels like that was the prime. Like, there are a lot of examples of Shonda Rhimes just hating Meredith Grey with everything that she has. But that one feels like the biggest punch in the face, if you will.
Yeah, it was so... I just was like, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I can really get inside of the Grey's writers' minds. Mm-hmm. And that was one where I was just like, so this played well in the room?
Right.
And was like, yes, she's grieving. Okay. And I'm just, you know, we're spitballing safe space. What if she just gets absolutely pummeled and can't hold her children?
Just send her to like a support group and then have her cry. You know, there's lots of other ways for her to like go through it when she's still like very freshly widowed.
Right. You know, in general, I think that period of Meredith Grey, which, by the way, is the theme of today's episode, Meredith Grey, which obviously, I mean, so much. I mean, we're talking today about like Meredith's growth, like how Meredith changes. One of my least favorite kind of stretches of time for Meredith is kind of that post-attack, pre-Harper Avery time where she, I think, literally says that she doesn't need to have sex because work is like sex to her. And I'm like, no, that's not actually... No living person feels that way. I was like, you just, Ellen Pompeo, don't want to deal with men. And I respect that. But like, we have to come up with like a better explanation in the world of the show of why you aren't dating.
Yeah. She's like, I think she has the line that's like literally, Vagina City's a ghost town.
Yes. Yes, that's right. Yeah. It's just like, oh, okay.
I mean, sure, but like not for ever.
It's just like, you could say you're still grieving your husband.
Right. You could say, like, I'm too sad for
I'm
the
still
D.
too sad like, for the D. But, like, instead she's like, no, I actually, like, in theory would be ready to have sex. I just feel fulfilled sexually by my career.
By cutting people open.
I'm like, the times in my life where my career has been best, my vagina has been a ghost town and not in the way that I want.
No.
There's no energy. Yes. But I'm not like, well, I'm turned on all the time. I'm so tired. That's how, you know, your body works. Like, no. Mm. But yeah, I mean, I think I quit for about a year. Mm-hmm. And I'm always rewatching. I'm always going back and like watching different chunks. Like, I'll be like, oh, let's just get back into season four. And then I watch until, like, you know, end of season seven. I'm like, okay, yeah. And then what happened in season nine? I'll just hop around.
Yeah.
And I was doing that and I was like, I miss my friends.
Yeah.
I really miss my friends. I wish I knew what they were up to.
At a certain point, you've just been hanging out with them for so long. You're like, I need to see where they end up. And like, they do keep... Like, if the show had just gotten... There have been shows that have been on for so long and they just keep repeating these same storylines and, like, the characters are doing the same beats all the time. But this show does feel like it still has something to say about
them.
And I like that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one thing I think is really interesting is, like, periods of time when I was watching the show, I didn't start watching from the very beginning. I Blockbuster style binged the first, like... two or three seasons and then started watching it live. And it's so different when you're watching week to week, mm-hmm. because things like Denny ghost sex really feels like an eternity.
Yeah.
But when you're binging, you're like, oh, it's six episodes. Like, you just move through that. You can forgive these, what felt like these colossal betrayals by Shonda Rhimes. They happen so fast.
Yeah.
And I think that really helped me when I ended up getting back into it, because mm-hmm. if I had to just watch it like drip, drip, drip,
yes.
week by week after the attack, I think that would have been still really like discouraging. Mm-hmm. But I was kind of able to just like speed through it, respond to emails on my computer while I was watching and be like, you know, remind myself like, I don't live here. These people aren't real. Yes.
They are not personally attacking me.
Yeah, like I just can, you know. I can rise above, right? I can do that. I'm in therapy. I've been in therapy for years. Like, I have to apply that to my relationship with Grey's Anatomy. But I don't know. I still fucking love the show. I think it's so good.
Same.
But do you like the DeLucas while we're on the subject?
I was hesitant at first.
Oh, God. And I hate where this is going. I hate where this is going.
He fully won me over. He got me. It's just... And I'm watching... Currently, I'm watching seasons where he's like introduced and he's like sleeping with Maggie and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And like, that's weird because he feels like a completely different person. But now
that's a Grey's problem,
right?
At times. Like,
yeah.
Like when you watch episodes where April Kepner gets introduced,
like the early ones,
you're like, first of all, she's not a redhead. Like, what the fuck?
April Kepner is a redhead.
Yeah, like, first of all, April Kepner has brown hair, so sound the alarm. Second of all, she hasn't talked about being on a farm. She hasn't talked about Christianity. Like, we know she's a virgin, but like, that's it. Yeah, it takes a long ass time. But yeah, wow. I'm just like, honestly, so disappointed to hear that, because I think that DeLuca is a blight.
You know, that's fair. I just... He's integral to me in the Grey's Anatomy becoming hornier of it all.
That is true.
And
he has
like,
a good look, as you've talked about on Twitter.
It's like, hilarious. Him and Meredith are hilarious to me because he looks also exactly like Derek. And so it's just like he does have such a really similar type. It's like swapped Derek, where like he's the like underling at the hospital and she's the powerful like super surgeon.
I know. And I like really have to kind of examine like sociologically what's happening here for me. But I'm like, it's not as fun when the woman is in charge. I do think it's actually like from a cultural like gendered perspective, I'm like, oh no, that's the wrong opinion to have. But then when I actually think about like Meredith, I'm like, mm-hmm. no, like, why does Meredith have to fucking do the work? Like, someone needs to come in here and like get it done. And yeah, I mean, he's just young. That whole thing that he had with like the other intern who was on So You Think You Can Dance, like, and crucially, an episode of Criminal Minds I just watched. I was like, ugh, that storyline sucks and doesn't make me like him.
He didn't interest me until the moment that he like started looking at Meredith and it was like he was so in awe of her, and that really got me. That's what roped me in. I was like, okay, he keeps speaking Italian at her,
which again, like, and I really can't stress this enough, the way that they've justified why two Italian siblings who are very close, one speaks English with no accent and one speaks fluent Italian with an accent when she speaks in English, it's not correct.
It's like, it's
the
not
logic
correct.
Doesn't hold. No. I mean, yes, he does, as you have discussed on Twitter, give the look very well. He has the same hair as Derek. But he, up until recently, had no personality.
He didn't have a single personality.
Like, no, and not even no personality, no qualities.
No.
Like, he had no, like, qualities. No. There was nothing about him. And for some reason, he gives me shades of, and I cannot believe I remember this character's name, Shane Ross.
Oh, yeah.
Shane was
boinking Christina in Switzerland.
His dick was so wet for Christina because she was talented.
Yeah.
And she like was considering it. I was like, no. Why are we so easily swayed by a younger person who just thinks you're smart? Like,
right.
This is not the same character was just like, I'm fucking brilliant. Like, people need to get on board. I'm like, no. Of course he thinks you're brilliant.
The episode that really got me last season was the one with what's his name? The guy from Felicity, Ben from Felicity.
Mm-hmm.
Where he
everyone's from Felicity or Allie McBeal. Yes. That's like kind of a fun like Grey's Universe thing that's happening right now.
Or like some
another person from Allie McBeal.
Yeah. Or in early seasons, it was like Gilmore Girls, and like you could tell that Shonda Rhimes had like binged that show and was like, "I'll pull them."
Yes,
but when Ben from Felicity showed up last season, that was the episode where I was like really back on board with Grey's Anatomy and with its horniness and with Meredith Grey, where I was like, "Oh, they're actually gonna let her have horny feelings again, and also like mushy feelings again," where she was like kind of opening up to him and they had really good chemistry. And so I kept just waiting for him to come back. But I don't think he's ever going to come back.
Scott Speedman. They made like some, I think people reacted so well to him.
Yeah.
And then Grey's Anatomy had to like literally put out a press release to be like, hey, so about that. We like only wrote one episode for him and really just wanted it to prove that she can like feel those feelings again.
It worked well.
Like, it worked too well. Yeah, especially because like in comparison to Nathan, where it was like, what is going on
like,
here?
I guess they can have like hate sex.
Although that was someone who I eventually became on board with too.
Same.
And then I was like, and it's what? His fiance is alive?
Yeah. It took too many. It was like a little too sad. Too many dead partners in that relationship.
Too many dead partners. The addition of like the Syrian refugee child was just like, sometimes we're trying to do too much.
Yeah.
Sometimes we were too ambitious.
Yes. But I think what happened with DeLuca is I very slowly and very begrudgingly accepted that Scott Speedman would not be returning.
Yeah.
Partially because I also furiously emailed the Grey's Anatomy publicist and was like, when?
When is he coming back?
When?
And they were like, in talks?
Alana, no, he's not. And I was I guess I have to move on with my life somehow, as if he's like somebody who rejected me.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I guess they're going. So it became clear to me that DeLuca was their replacement for him, and
the wedding.
So I'm
was
hoping,
weird.
Yes,
yeah.
I'm hoping that because like what I really crave from Meredith Grey right now, and because she closed off so much after Derek died, is I really crave her like opening up emotionally and actually like talking about her feelings. And I just want that. I want that to be what comes out of her and DeLuca, is her actually like being willing to, because even with Nathan, she like barely admitted to herself and to him that she liked him, even though they were like by the end kind of in love. And I want her to be able to say words with her feelings in them.
Yes, I feel that too. I mean, I just wonder, like when they brought Link in, who I really like, I was like, this is the way to do it. You bring in a super hot guy who like, we don't know.
Yeah.
And you just set him up. But yeah, that hasn't exactly played out in the way that we thought.
And I love Chris Carmack.
He does look cuckoo with some of, like when When like the child gives him a haircut and they're like, no, we're really going to play the reality of this. He's going to now have the haircut that the child gave him for the rest of the episode. And he's like flirting with Meredith. And I'm like,
I don't know. Oh,
too convincing. This haircut is bad.
It's real bad.
Yeah, it was not good. Yeah, I mean, when I started watching Grey's, I didn't like Meredith Grey. Mm-hmm. She was not my favorite character. Yeah. I wasn't really rooting for her. Since I've rewatched as an adult, I'm like, oh, I get it now. I just kind of was like young. Yeah. I didn't have sadness yet in that way.
All of her sadness just pent up.
Right. Like, I think it just was like, I was like, God, what's her deal? I just was like, she seems gloomy. But now I just, I'm like, oh, I adore her. Right. And I also, it's also influenced by just like, I have such great respect for Ellen Pompeo.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love her. And I think she's truly a gifted actor that I like, I just enjoy when she's around because I'm like, oh, she's good. She like makes acting choices.
She does. And subtly, like it doesn't feel like,
yes,
like Meredith Grey is acting, but it feels like you're just in her and you know her like instinctively really well.
Yeah.
That's really hard to do over like that many years.
Right. Well, in that Hollywood Reporter article that she like dictated, it sounds like she just yelled at someone and they wrote down
like,
what
they
she
got
said
on the phone and she's like, this is my career.
Yeah, I mean, God, like, God bless her, she is just an absolute lunatic. And they kept her away from doing press for so long, and then at a certain point they're like, I think we have to let Ellen out.
My favorite thing is that just her full Boston comes out and she's so aggressive. Boston.
But she's just like, Faye Dunaway drives a fucking Prius. I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad car to drive, but do you think she drives a Prius? It's like, oh my God. Also, there's a video of her for like Elle or some like kind of high-minded lady magazine where she is just like, here's how you negotiate a deal. And she just yells at the camera for like 5 full minutes. She's like, know your worth. It's amazing. But in that article, she talks about how, oh, what was I going to say? Totally lost it.
The 15 years, the like the longevity part.
Exactly.
Yes.
It was like you can, anyone can play a character for 2 seasons. Mm-hmm. Like if you can do it for 10 fucking seasons, like that's real acting. I'm like, yes, bitch.
You can see in a lot of shows. And like notably not Grey's Anatomy, but you can see in a lot of other shows where when the actors just check out.
Totally. And I think that like everyone on Grey's tries really hard,
right,
which like has its own version of backfiring. But that's something that like is nuts to me. Like they're all like, yes, I take my work very seriously.
Right. And I don't get the sense that it's actually been like a peaceful set. Like they're not usually in the set type of set. They're like, we're not like, we're a family. It's like, no, we had Katherine Heigl. We had Isaiah Washington and T.R. Knight. Like, you
absolutely
could tell when T.R. Knight was like, I'm not showing up for work anymore. And then,
oh, just, yeah, baby. I mean, I've said this on our very limited episode so far. I will say this as many times as possible. If there's one thing that can come out of this podcast in my dream world, it is that I put pressure on the Grey's Institution to do an oral history.
Oh, my God.
I want it so bad. I need to know what was happening.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I would also say that like Ellen Pompeo at this point only works with her friends on the show,
yes,
and they write around people who she wants to be in scenes with, which is gorgeous to me. Like,
yes,
it's so fucking,
she's
funny.
Like, I'm not doing,
she doesn't like
person.
Sarah Drew. She's not friends with Sarah Drew. She did not do scenes with Sarah Drew. She's friends with Camilla Luddington, who plays Joe. She is friends with Justin Chambers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You can tell that like those are the two from the original cast that liked each other and they're still going.
And they're still friends. Yeah. I mean, but it's, did you know that Justin Chambers has 5 children?
I do.
And
it's
the
my
youngest one is like 17.
Oh my God. I didn't know he had, I didn't know, my favorite thing about him is he has so many children.
He's had five kids like basically this whole time. And the youngest one is like finishing high school.
Yeah.
That?
Hell, if you want to do a second episode just on Alex Karev.
Oh my God.
I could go on forever. That man loves babies so much.
Loves babies. Yeah. But I mean, Ellen Pompeo like fully has preferences. Mm-hmm. And when Sarah Drew left,
You know, on Instagram, you can really see who's friends with each other.
Yeah, and I do feel like Ellen Pompeo is the type of person, this is just like conjecture, but that she's the type of person that will tell you to your face if she does not like you.
Absolutely.
I watched her Punk'd episode. Have you seen that?
Oh my God. No.
It's incredible.
What?
This is when I learned that Ellen Pompeo is like full Boston aggressive, because she's sitting there with her boyfriend, who is now her husband. And the prank is that the waitress is hitting on her boyfriend, and she like goes, the waitress walks away, and she like goes off to her boyfriend and being like, I can stab her. Does she think that I can't take her? Like she's doing this.
I am that pretends to be shocked gif, but I'm actually shocked. And I have my hands up around my mouth and my jaw is dropped open and my eyes are bugging out of my face. And I honestly have the instinct to be like, okay, actually, let's just end the podcast here, and I have to go home and watch this. But yeah. I will wait. Holy shit. How did I not know?
I don't know, but it is
this exists.
Burned into my brain.
Something that I watched recently is Ellen Pompeo's deleted scenes from Eternal Sunshine and Spotless Mind.
Oh my God.
And did I have work I should have been doing at the time? Absolutely. Did I watch them? Mm-hmm. She's very good.
I want to know what her movie career would have been like without Grey's Anatomy, but also I would not give up Grey's Anatomy for that.
Exactly. I feel the same way. I do think that, I mean, she's kind of said this, mm-hmm. like she felt that she was supposed to be this big star, and then things just were starting to not pan yeah. out. And I think she, at the time when she took Grey's, was like, I don't want to be stuck on a procedural. I'm mm-hmm. like meant to, I'm poised to do right. these bigger projects. But she feels very strongly that she would have had a short expiration mm-hmm. date. That is industry conscious.
Yes.
Like, yes.
Yeah.
And also, like, this is just from a practical, like, perspective. Like, she has had kids. Mm-hmm. She looks different now than yeah. she did when she started. Like, she probably was the tiniest actress that has ever existed. Like, she's literally
she's
like
Gumby.
She is the build of Anna Kendrick, but taller, which should be medically impossible. Yes. Like, it's
stretcher
unreal.
Up. Yeah. And they like costume it on Grey's where it like hides it sometimes. And then sometimes I'm like, are you a pencil? Like, not in a bad way,
early
but
seasons,
it's just like interesting to me.
God. I love her so much, I'd die for her, but she is truly a maniac. Yes. I mean, she honestly, she would kill maniac. Me, but I love her. Yeah. I love her so much. Okay, well, let's just get to these clips because honestly, we've already kind of talked about one of them, but we'll get there. So I've said this on the podcast before, and that my absolute favorite Meredith arc, and maybe even arc on the whole show, is when she goes through therapy. And so when you were like, I want to talk about the ways in which Meredith has changed, and I want to look at these clips from her therapy experience, I got choked up because I was like, I fucking love these clips so much. So you pulled like kind of two from one episode, and then I pulled one from another. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I guess we'll start with those. God. She really, it's so cool because, like, she really does change.
Yes.
Like, her character really is completely different
yeah.
in many ways after she goes through therapy, and that rules.
Yes. Like, it I want that from so many other shows now of,
yes.
like, that turn where they solve some of the problems that she had before. Like, that she genuinely moves on from them, but at the same time, she still, it's not like she is just cured of everything.
Right.
And it's not as if there aren't new other problems.
And there's something that I really like about it, which is that like therapy inherently has a sense of history to
right.
it. You're always kind of reevaluating like, well, what went into this moment? Like what went into you? And something that I think there's always a tendency in TV to be like, well, this arc is over, so we've moved on.
Mm-hmm.
Like the body, the bomb in the body, like that's over. And
yes.
it's just so accurate to then have a therapist be like, well, okay, so this happened to you in 2 years ago,
yeah.
like last year. So that was, you know, very recently,
yes.
and you're probably still, that's still on the table to talk about. And, you know, that's not something you see in TV very mm-hmm. much, where someone's like, okay, let's actually really unpack what happened to you a year ago and how that's impacting how you treat other people now. And I think that, like, they do that too with after the shooting, like
mm-hmm.
Christina has almost a full season of
yeah.
just like having very, very serious PTSD.
Hardcore.
And it is not compelling to watch.
No,
it is like,
just like
not
this is sad.
Fun. Yeah.
It's just sad.
It's not dynamic. It's not, but it's like you watch it and you kind of can't look away, partially because you're like, yep. I mean, yeah.
If they didn't do it, then like, why would they do those storylines? Like,
right.
It's like, otherwise you're just like, here's a moment of horror.
Right.
And now back to the fun.
Okay, so this first clip is, I mean, truly a favorite, of an all-time fave for me, where she goes into therapy and she, and her therapist, Dr. Wyatt, really gives her a talking to, and she kind of is like, give me my file.
We've got this patient, and she's got true love. Do you want to know why? Because her boyfriend doesn't exist. Derek is all broken up over her. Like it means something that she's having an affair with a hallucination.
But Derek wasn't ready to give up on the relationship, and you were.
No, I didn't give up. I wanted to try again, and then he went and kissed Rose. So he's the one who messes up, not me.
But it's a relationship. People make mistakes. And you stand back waiting for him to fail so you can say, aha, now I quit.
No, it wasn't working.
Was your life not working when you let that slip out from under you?
Okay, when are you going to stop suggesting that I'm suicidal?
When you start acting like somebody that wants to be alive.
Give me my chart.
Why?
Because I'm not suicidal, and if it says that, then it's wrong.
What happened last year when you fell in the water?
I almost drowned. You think I did that for kicks?
You put your hand in a body cavity that contained unexploded ordnance.
I was trying to save a patient.
Why is it that every other person in that room had the sense to hit the deck? You know, people run away from this line between life and death. You seem to stand on it and wait for a strong wind to sway you one way or the other. You're careless with your life. You're not slitting your wrist, but you're careless. Probably because your mother told you you were a waste of space on this planet. The problem is you believed her. And if you don't watch out, one of these days you're going to die because of it.
Hand me my chart. Now. Don't ever talk about my mother again.
Yes.
I mean,
drag
an all-time great. An all-time great. Because it's like, also, no one has fucking said that to Meredith
right.
up until this point. No one's been like, hey, have you considered the fact that you keep almost dying?
You, like,
and it's because you put yourself... Yes.
I love that storyline so much. Part, like, I really loved the... It sounds weird, but I really loved... Like, kind of watching, they never call it this, but like Meredith's suicidal ideation, basically.
Yes, absolutely.
Where, like, earlier in the season, like, Derek catches her in the tub, like, seemingly just like kind of waiting to see if she'll drown.
Yes.
And he's like, honey.
Yes.
Are you
he's like,
okay?
Don't
die.
Don't do that. Yeah. She, like, seems to have kind of liked how it felt like when she was about to drown.
Right. And then I think it's like literally later that episode or like a couple episodes later where she like falls into the water and then just gives up and does not
oh yeah
swim.
You're right, that's before she drowns. She
right.
like yeah she like submerges herself
right.
and he like comes into the tub and she's just like he comes into the bathroom and
yeah.
she's in the tub just like completely submerged and he's like, what the fuck are you doing?
He's like,
yeah.
let's talk about this. And she's like, I don't talk about things. No. And then he pulls her out of the river or whatever, or the ocean, and like, and she's pretty much dying in that episode. And his first thought is that she did it on purpose.
Yes.
Which, like, they don't have Meredith know that she's doing all of this stuff. But, like, I like that they kind of play with that, like, everyone can see that she wants to die.
Right. Yeah. It's so good. Well, and then you also pulled this clip from the end of that same episode, which is, you know, she's quit therapy halfway through this episode. And then, like, God, like, a lot of stuff happens. I mean,
was it the because this is the one where the woman has Alzheimer's or something. And she has the boyfriend who, like, her sister doesn't believe exists.
Yes. So it is. Oh, God. This is, I mean, I think it's one of my favorite patient stories of all time, even though it's one of the most blatantly manipulative, like emotionally manipulative things that could literally ever happen. But it's a patient who has a brain tumor, and she keeps describing this man who she met. It's Regina Taylor, which is like amazing. Regina Taylor is like, I met this man, Andre, and I met him on this cruise, and I lost my flip-flop and he found it. And it's like all these like kind of fairy tale things where the sister is like, there's no fucking way this guy exists. And the where the tumor is, it's like it presses on whatever of like reality and imagination. And she's drawn all these pictures of him in her journal. And she's like, you think I made this up? You think I made this up? And he's like going to fly in for her surgery. Mm-hmm. But the clock is ticking because like, I don't know, the tumor is going to something or an aneurysm is going to burst or
don't
whatever.
They, like, convince her that he doesn't exist. Like, she like, she's like, at, by the time she goes into surgery, she's like, okay, I guess he doesn't exist. And
she
that's heartbreaking.
Literally weeps, sobs, just like gut punching sobs of her just being like, I made him up. And Derek is like, I'm sorry. Because, you know, in one of the great traditions of Grey's of a case being a metaphor, Derek is like, Meredith is like, the guy doesn't exist. And Derek's like,
love isn't real.
Yes. And Derek's like, why would you think that? Like, they have a huge disagreement about it the whole episode. And eventually he's like, okay, fine, he doesn't exist. And tells her, like, I think that this is something that your brain made up. And then she goes into surgery and she does not make it. She never wakes up. I mean, she doesn't die on the table, but she never wakes up, and he does exist,
and he
does
up.
Show up, and he cries at her bedside. It's brutal.
It's real. So that's one of the ones where I'm like, this is so good, but why do I watch this show?
Oh my
it's
God.
It's so sad.
It's, yeah. I mean, I was pulling this clip last night, and I was just like, like, you know, kind of crying. But then he kind of decides that he wants to try and make it with Rose. It's like a really brutal episode, and she ends up going back into the office. But part of it is, I'm going to pull it up right now. Also, just three cheers for Amy Madigan, because her performance as Dr. Wyatt is so fucking good.
My mother tried to kill herself when I was a kid. After the love of her life disappeared. I never told anybody that before.
Okay.
So you think I'm broken? Fix me. Because I'm no quitter. Let's go.
End of episode.
Yes.
Oh,
that's
shit.
My favorite. That might be my favorite Meredith moment.
Yeah. Why? Talk about it.
I think because it's her actually thinking about herself and her life and actually deciding to make a big change. Like, she's like, I have this, I'm fucked up in this way because of these things that happened to me. And I've had a lot of abandonment issues.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff, a lot of trauma. My mom sucked.
Yes.
And that's messing with the love of my life. So how do I not make the same mistakes that she did? I really love in TV when people decide not to make the same mistakes as like the people before them or their parents or whatever.
Absolutely. And I think that part of what I love about that moment is that it's just like a very like clear like character moment. Mm-hmm. Like just the fact that she's like, I'm not a quitter.
Yes.
It's such like a West Side Story era, like, what are you saying, you're chicken? Like, and that's like a motivator for a character. But I think that because there's one therapy scene in between where she comes in and I think Dr. Wyatt's like, well, you're quitting therapy just like you quit everything else in your life. You quit your relationship, you quit your life, you quit all the stuff. And it's like, you know, this isn't how therapy works, but it's how close relationships where people are actually willing to like tell you how it is works. And I think that the fact that that specifically gets under Meredith's skin, that she's like, oh, the way that I deal with conflict isn't sustainable. Like, I yeah. can't just keep abdicating my own personal responsibility and just being like, well, time for me to just run away from this because yeah. it's hard, especially when, you know, you look at what her career is and she never expects to do it in that arena, but it's like, mm-hmm. how does it not bleed in and stuff like that? So, yeah, I love it.
Yes. I feel like also it's just that moment is so hard won. Like, this is like yes. four seasons in. So it's like Grey's Anatomy is established. The characters are, we know who they are. And like, this is a turning point that like every single thing that we've seen in the show has built up to.
Yes.
And like every single like conflict that Meredith Grey has been through has been leading up to like this decision. Mm-hmm. And it genuinely changes what she looks and feels like and how she acts for like a long time after that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I pulled my favorite, one of my favorite therapy moments, which is the final moment. It's yes. it's in season 4, episode 17, last episode of season because of the writer's strike, which is really puts it in time for you. This is 2007. And Meredith, who has kind of decided to do the hard work of therapy, talks about how her mother told her to be extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And she also is like her therapist. I mean, it's such good TV because her therapist is like, you're missing something. There is something that you don't see and it's right in front of you. And Meredith's like, just tell me what it is. And she's like, no, you have to figure this out for yourself because it is your relationship with your mother crystallized. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to just figure it out. And so Meredith is, you know, Derek is still with Rose. That fucking sucks. And then she's really starting to understand the ramifications that the chief had on her mother and how now that she's kind of accepted the fact that her mother tried to kill herself after the chief left her, like, that is like impacting her work life because that's her boss.
I love every time that she yells at the chief about her mom. He never expects it. It's usually just like they're passing in the hallway and she's like, fuck you, fuck you.
I know. And he also, it's like, it's truly like the ultimate trump card because whenever she brings it up, he's like, yeah I did that. Bye. I did do that. Yeah, you're right. So this clip is the like the final moment in therapy in this season, in this arc. But it starts with, I'm starting with when she confronts the chief.
So you convinced Shepard to do the second surgery without my approval?
So?
So? That's how you speak to the chief, so?
My mother tried to kill herself after you left. Did you know that? Did you know that?
I didn't know that. I'm sorry, I didn't know.
She was a brilliant surgeon. How could you do that to her? She was a talented, gifted, extraordinary surgeon.
Meredith?
Tell me. She was a surgeon. She was an excellent surgeon. If she was really trying to kill herself, she wouldn't have slit her wrists. She knew better. She would have taken the scalpel and cut her carotid artery. It would have taken seconds to die. She didn't really want to die. She was an excellent, gifted, extraordinary surgeon. She didn't want to die.
What did she want?
She wanted Richard to come back to her.
And why didn't he come back?
Well, because he never knew about it and she was too stubborn to ask.
What does that mean?
Well, that part I don't know. Can you just tell me that part for once?
I can. It means that you are a gifted, talented, extraordinary surgeon, exactly like your mother. But the difference is you get to learn from her mistakes.
Be extraordinary. She wasn't talking about surgery.
No, she wasn't.
She wasn't talking about surgery at all.
Oh. Yeah. Yes. I mean, truly a favorite. I mean, that's maybe like a top three all-time favorite Grey's moment. Oh, my God. First of all, Ellen Pompeo's acting in that in both of those scenes is so good. I just think that, first of all, I love anything that's a little mystery, just as far as like how TV writing goes. I'm like, yes, she solved it. She solved it. But just the way that, two things. Mm-hmm. In the world of the character, I'm like, ugh, I just love that, like, she has this moment of realizing that, like, her mom, who she thought only cared about career, actually was wishing for her to have, like, a great love like in her
life.
Yes, and to have a full life and to not sacrifice, but to not sacrifice anything for them. But what I also really love is I think this, to my memory, is the only time that they use the Meredith and Derek theme in the show when he's not, like, even there.
Yeah, I didn't even notice that until this time. And I was like, it's the Derek theme. Oh, no.
I know. And I think it's such a smart TV-making move because that gives you such, like, an emotional experience of, like, oh, my God, yes, it's love. It's true love. But she goes in and she's actually talking about resolving this thing with her mom that is going to have ramifications in her romantic life. But I think that's such, like, a... It's such a cool way to flip something that they've been doing for seasons of, like, using that music.
Yeah. I feel like with the whole Derek thing, it's easy to just fall back on, like, typical conversations around, like, romance on TV. But, like, I feel like Derek, in terms of what he means for Meredith, is so much more than just, like, even just a character or a love interest or, like, her big love. It's like he... And, like, this can have, like, good things and bad things when it comes to, like, defining a female character. But I feel like Meredith is also always more than him. I think it's just in terms of what he helps make her see. And it doesn't feel like it's, like, bad or lazy writing or, like, unfeminist writing. It feels like he is helping to open up a whole emotional world for her. And even now that he's gone off the show, that's still there. And, like, that whole arc is still so poignant. And I feel like that's why they're, like, they were such a... like meaningful couple. And this had been like so many shows go through a thing where like, oh, we have to keep them apart for like these arbitrary reasons for like a certain amount of time and like until like this season or this episode,
right?
And like Grey's kind of cut that off at that point with that therapy thing. They were like, no, they're gonna get together and that's still, there's still gonna be a lot to deal with,
but like, she makes the house out of candles.
It's like, we're not gonna do like, it's boring and not showing us anything about her character anymore if she just keeps avoiding him.
Yes. So the next clip that I pulled, I have two more, and they're before chronologically your last clip, so I'm gonna just slip them in. These are two moments where I'm just like, wow, incredible personal growth for Meredith, like unreal. The first one is when she decides to give her liver to Thatcher, which is like a really tough episode because at this point, like, Lexi and Meredith are close, but Lexi still just like doesn't get the fact that Meredith does not have a good relationship with Thatcher. She doesn't want to have a good relationship with Thatcher. And I think he's already like slapped her and uninvited her to the funeral by now, to his wife's, Lexi's mom's funeral. So not like the best relationship. And he comes in and he asks, and he needs a liver transplant because he's an alcoholic and he can't get on the transplant list, and Lexi isn't a match. And so Lexi like begs Meredith, and it's like actually a huge violation. And it's a really frustrating episode because you're like, this is inappropriate and unfair, and you're putting Meredith in a really shitty position. And she then ends up saying this.
You're the guy who used to pour my cereal in the morning. That's it. That's all I remember about you. You're not my father. You're just the guy who used to pour my cereal. And if you die, it probably won't change my life that much. But it will change hers. If you die, it will break her. And I'm not going to let you do that. I don't know what it's like to have a father. But I do know what it's like to have a sister. And it's good. if we can get through this, then the door will be open for us to get to know each other. The door's open.
So good.
I love that scene so much.
Yes, me too. It's just so, it's just such a different Meredith, which is why I pulled it. It's just like, it's not the Meredith we meet in season one. It's honestly not even the Meredith we know in season like three, mid four.
Even current Meredith. It's like, it's like sometimes, like I think that's what makes it good is that it's so rare. Like when she opens up that emotionally and she is like, I love this person so much.
Right.
Like I remember when the Derek pick me, choose me scene happened. Like I was sitting there with my mom and she was, my mom was like, I don't like that she's begging him to love her. And I was like, you don't like the character though. Like she, this is very rare for the character to like open up like this. Like that's a huge move for her. And the same with Lexi. She took a long time to warm up.
And Lexi, I mean, I love Lexi and I really came to love Lexi. But one thing that I think they do a really good job with Lexi is like they make her someone who Meredith just would not like if she met her. And like, if I met you and I didn't know you were my sister, and the being my sister actually makes things worse. Like, I just don't care for you. And I love that. I think that's, I think that there's like maybe some type of dramatic impulse to be like, they're exactly alike. They're the perfect pair.
Right.
And it's undeniable. And it's like, no, that's also not how things work.
Yeah.
And it's so, and it's such a like colossal unfairness that Meredith has gotten this short end of the stick from like not having a dad around, but also like not really having a mom around and stuff like that. And Lexi had this very like picturesque upbringing with the exact guy who could not deliver that to Meredith. And then she has the audacity to be like, can you undergo this actually kind of major surgery right before a hospital merger?
Yes.
Where your job is on the line. Do you mind doing that for me?
Yeah. It feels like Lexi is like literally that shiny, happy person that Meredith always talks about not being. And that was really like a good thing for the show to do. And I feel like even with her second sister, her second surprise sister with Maggie, like one, I wish that they talked about Lexi more in that and like how that and how that like impacts that relationship. But I do still like seeing the way that they put, they make her sisters like challenge her and like open her up more. Like, no, we're family. I know that you don't know how to do family. That's your whole thing, but we're going to make you.
Side note, they just announced that they've cast Derek's fourth sister.
What?
Like, who's giving the note more sisters? Who's looking at Grace and being like, you know what we need? We kind of need some more sisters.
Didn't
I'm like,
they?
God, we have too many sisters.
And she has like another sister on like a naval base somewhere that they could pull out at any moment. Like,
oh, yeah.
Thatcher's other daughter.
Molly. Yeah, no, no. This is Derek's sister because we've met Nancy, who was naked in the trailer.
Yes.
We know Amelia. He has four sisters.
There was like, I think we met Campbell, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She showed up. They all slept with Mark.
Yeah. But this is sister four. And I guess we're going to meet her.
Okay.
Okay. The last clip that I pulled is when Meredith. So it's later in the season, season six, episode 23, which is the beginning of the two-parter. That's the shooting, unfortunately. But it's at the very beginning when Meredith is pregnant. And she's like surprised that she is actually really excited. Yeah, short-lived, but good moment. Okay.
No way.
Yeah.
No freaking way.
Right?
Oh my God. Okay. Were you trying to get?
No, total accident. I used the thing.
Oh, so are we happy about this, or are we exercising our legal right to choose? Okay, all right. Congratulations. Let's hug it out.
Okay.
Oh my God. Are you gonna tell him? Have you told him?
No, I just found out.
Tell Teddy.
Derek.
Were you gonna tell him now?
Yeah.
Okay.
How is the Teddy and Owen thing going?
Oh, fantastic. It's going great. I'm completely over it. This is very adult. I'm really proud of you, Meredith Grey.
I'm proud of me too.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Hey, I hope it has its hair.
Me too.
It's like such a good like friendship scene.
Yeah.
But it's so, It's so fun to like watch both of them be like,
yes,
this is crazy, but we are so excited.
Yes, especially like with her and Christina, like for the both of them, this is not where they thought that they would be.
Yeah.
Like at all. This is not, especially like, it's such a perfect moment of their friendship because it's not Christina Yang's personality at all to be like, babies, yay. But yeah, like, you, 'cause she knows Meredith and loves Meredith so much that like, she's like, oh my God, my friend gets this happy thing.
Right. It's like a super, super genuine moment. And I think that, you know, Meredith holds a belief in the early seasons in the show that like her mom having her was like immoral, and her mom like resented Meredith for her potential to dampen her career. And I think that it is like the result of Be Extraordinary, yeah, that like she's like, oh, I could do this. I could, yeah, have a baby with Derek and I could do it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so good.
Me too.
Okay, your last clip. I mean, we already talked about Scott Speedman. Oh, you, yes, pulled a Scott Speedman clip, which is so, it's such a nice clip. I watched it last night and I was like, God, I can't believe this guy just existed for one.
I know. It's honestly rude.
Flash in the pan. Yeah. So brief.
Because I literally was like, oh, I guess he's endgame now. I guess we've totally met Mary the second husband.
Really? Well, he's sick. It's a bit of a Henry situation, but we'll make it work. Which, by the way, fucking love Henry.
So when I was young, my girlfriend and I stayed in this tiny village. And I think we paid this woman like $2 to crash at her house and drink all of her wine. And she was 97. Her sister was 101. The neighbor was 99. And they grew their own food and they wandered these little cobblestone streets with chickens to the beaches.
Wait, I'm sorry. Did the chickens wandered on the beach, or how does that work?
No, with people, these incredible people who were laughing and fighting with the people they loved, and no one was in any rush. No one had anywhere to go. And they were happy.
Oh, you want to go live with the chickens and the happy people?
Yes.
Okay.
Me and my kids. And my sisters can come because they can do the cooking and the growing, because, I mean, please. And everyone's already living till they're 100 years old, right? There's no cancer or Alzheimer's, so there's no lives for me to save, and no one will die on my watch. Sounds pretty good, just me and my kids in a hammock and a stack of books that I'll buy with no intention of ever reading.
Hmm. In this scenario, I don't suppose there's any room on that hammock for someone about your age. Brilliant, but not too brilliant, with one debatably functioning kidney. I mean, unless you want to lug a canoe over your head with me, because I'm game either way.
Your labs.
Oh,
go there with him.
Go what? There. Invite him. Get yes. Get the big hammock.
Yes.
Yeah, I really like that clip. I kind of had, I mean, I knew, I remembered Scott Speedman in an abstract way, mm-hmm, but I'm so glad that you pulled this clip, because it's, when you watch it, you're like, oh, it's Meredith is like, she's going there mentally.
Right. She's like, you literally can see him like kind of crack her open,
yes,
like emotionally. She's like, and at the end of the episode, she tells Alex, like, I haven't felt this way since Derek.
Yes. And she's like, I felt like the girl in the bar again, or, you know, whatever.
And then they like show that flash of her like at the bar,
oh my
when she
God.
Was younger. And I'm like, don't do this to me.
Give me a warning.
Yes.
Yeah.
But she's just like, she's so, like, she's done a lot of emotional work, clearly, and she's changed a lot, but she has, it's like she closed off again when Derek died in a different way, where
totally.
she still doesn't talk about her feelings. She still does. She still, like, is like, no, I'm the boss now. I'm, like, walking around, like, big boss on campus, and you can't see my pain or my, even my joy half the time.
Right.
And it's really any character who like brings that out in her, I usually warm up to pretty fast.
Yeah, totally. Oh my gosh, those were all the clips. Ugh, Meredith, she's grown so much. I'm so proud of her.
Me
I'm so
too.
Proud of my friend Meredith Grey.
I know.
Okay, so two more things left.
Okay.
The first is a bit of a quiz. I'm going to play a song
okay.
from a Grey's Anatomy moment.
Okay.
Then you see if you can remember what that song is from. I've only done this once before, and I thought it was a really easy one, and then it wasn't. But I also know that you've done a lot of rewatching. So this either is, this also might be too easy, but I don't know. I don't know what to think. But we're about to find out. Okay, here we go.
Like, that's definitely, like, bringing something up. But yeah. I feel like it's like, is that The Drowning?
Ding, ding, yeah! Ding. You got yes! it.
I just picture her, like, half, her head, like, half emerged, just, like, sad, suicidal eyes.
Yes, that is literally sinking. Exactly it. Yeah.
And that creepy blonde child who didn't say anything when she drowned. She just, like, watched her until somebody asked her.
Oh, just because you're traumatized doesn't mean you can just let her die. What are you doing?
I think that child was a ghost the whole time.
It, absolutely. I mean, let's just hear it with the splashing to to really drive it home. Wow. What an iconic moment. To me, that song sounds like someone drowning. I think they did a good job.
Yes.
Okay. The final thing to do is the way that we end every episode, which is that you create and perform your own Shondalog. Your Shondalog is a Shonda Rhimes style monologue where one character talks for anywhere between 15 seconds and truly one full minute. And there's a thesis sentence that starts and ends it. And frankly, often comes up many times in between. We will each do one. You can do something that you actually would like to say to someone in your life, or you can really just drop yourself into the world of Grey's Anatomy and just, you know, find inspiration from anywhere. And I will go to, as I always do, the huge playlist called Grey's Anatomy that has 800 songs, and most of them I've never heard before. And I choose one at random and hope it's not like a bow wow wow type of song. And if it is, I change it to find something more dinky and with guitar.
I'm currently rewatching the season where they like only play acoustic covers of not even the 80s one was weird enough, but this one's like, like acoustic covers of like Meghan Trainor.
Shonda was like very proud of that artistic decision and tweeted about it a lot. And I was like it's bitch, terrible. I hate
it's
this.
It's like Taylor Swift, shake it off.
Yeah. It took me out of every episode. I think that was also the same season where every episode had like so many flashbacks.
Yes. Where it's like Meredith minutes. At the carousel with her like about to commit suicide mother. Oh. Like every time.
Yeah, I mean, there was one episode where I like counted just by the minutes, like how many episodes in this 42-minute episode are, how many minutes in this 42-minute episode are flashbacks? Mm-hmm. And I was like, 8? That's most of it. That's, are you fucking kidding
me? Like, they're just like, the writers want to go home to their kids more.
Yeah, they're like, oh, let's just bring the carousel thing back again, see if there's any juice left in that. It's like, there isn't. There actually never was. Yeah. God. And yet, I still love the show and would die for it. Would you like to go first or second?
I'll go second.
Okay. What will I Shondalog on today? Okay. This is something in my real life. What song will I choose? Something, I'll go down to the bottom of this playlist. Something called Coincidental sounds promising. Oh yeah, this is it. Well, I am tired. Nobody lives in the morning. I know you see it. I know you hear me. And you don't seem to do anything about it. I'm tired. I don't sleep anymore.
I can't sleep. I don't have enough pillows. And I don't have pillows that are good. I don't sleep. And I want to sleep. Because you know what? There is a lot of things and people who need me. And they need me to not be a ghoul. I'm so tired. And you're not doing anything to fix it. So you need to either knock me out or install blackout curtains or something, because I'm tired. And I can't do this anymore, so drug me or something. I'm tired. Wow.
That was a good song choice.
Thank you so much. Yeah, almost all of them are like that. I'm like, wow, it's amazing that they find like 800 versions of the same song to put on the show. Yeah, I am, as you can like maybe tell from that, like I'm having a lot of trouble sleeping and it's a huge ripoff. I'm like, maybe it's my pillows that are the issue. I'm like, no, I think it's something in here. I think it's something up here that's rattling around. Yeah, I'm off work this week and I'm like, if I don't catch up on sleep, the stakes feel very high, no, which doesn't like help you fall asleep.
I'm but like, that too.
I'm like, if I don't catch up on sleep and feel well rested, the thing's all gonna fall apart. Okay. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm gonna go for my life.
Yes. Wow. Okay. This song is called Uneven Odds.
Oh.
Let's see what happens.
Okay.
Nope. Oh my God. What a.
It's not the vibe.
Something. This has acoustic in the title. Okay. Feeling good about
yes.
it.
Feel free to play the acoustic Shake It Off. If you know.
I wouldn't do that to you.
Okay. There's just so much screaming. It's just every day I go to feed my cat and she's just screaming at me. And I'm like, you don't have a job. I don't have a job, but you especially don't have a job. I pay for your food every day. And then I feed you dinner, and 2 hours later you scream at me again. And last night I had this dream. Because I might move back to Los Angeles soon. And in order to do that, I have to transport my cat across the country. And that's just going to leave her screaming at me in JFK. As I take her out of her cat carrier, like the good cat mom that I am, and take her through security. And she's just so ungrateful for all of my hard work that she's gonna escape my arms in JFK and she's gonna scream at me there. And there's just so much screaming all the time. I think that's all I got.
Oh my God, bravo. Yes, a real life example. I love it. Oh God.
I think my favorite of those monologues was during the drowning episode where like, and it's because it's the worst monologue I've ever heard, where it's Katherine Heigl talking about butter. She's like, the tub of butter, George. And they're like, what do you mean our friend is dying? The tub of butter. I believe that if you like eat a tub of butter and nobody's around, that the calories don't count. And I was like, first of all, why would you do that?
She's like, and so I believe that Meredith will live. Like, oh God. Yeah.
It might have been that song.
Is that the writing that Katherine Heigl said wasn't worthy of an Emmy nomination? Oh no, what side am I on?
That's the thing. She said it about the George and Izzy season, and I was like, she's correct. I'm sorry that it's bad that she said it publicly,
yeah,
but
it's
she's not
really
wrong.
Bad. Yeah, you just like let yourself lose the Emmy. God damn. Yeah. Wow. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for coming to talk about Grey's. This truly has been a dream.
This is all I ever want to do, so I'm glad that I could do it
fully
today.
Same. Where can people find you?
I am on Twitter, is probably the easiest place. Alana Bennett, AlanaBennett. It's like the Pride and Prejudice people, but with an extra T for some reason.
Perfect. That
That'll help. That'll stick in people's mind. Well, thank you again so much for being here. Thank you to everyone who's listening. And I'll see you on the next Nicole's Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Forever Dog Team and liking our page on Facebook.